Hello and welcome to episode 135 of the Mad Happy Podcast. This is Phineas. Today we are running one of our favorite episodes from the archive, a conversation that Mason had with Eric the Architect, the multi-talented musician from Brooklyn, New York. They cover a lot. Mason had been a fan of his for a long, long time. So they had a lot to talk about, from growing up in Brooklyn, navigating the music scene, their personal lives. The core of the episode is focused on the mental health realities and challenges of being a music artist from a young age. So without further ado, the Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Mason and Eric the Architect.
You said you just moved out here?
About to be 4 years ago.
Okay, nice. From New York?
New York, yeah.
Nice. What finally like brought you out west?
I was tired of being in New York.
Yeah?
It was too fast, and I wanted to smoke pot and chill.
Couldn't smoke pot and chill, no?
You couldn't smoke pot in New York before.
Now you can though, right?
You can now.
Yeah. Would you ever go back, or you like it out here?
I like it here. I think if I moved back, I would be right back here. I think.
Yeah.
I'd probably be like, I want back to like slow pace, kind of relaxed, spread out time.
I feel like so much of your like just career and persona and like all that shit is so like deep NY. Like, was that a big, like a hard move for you, or like a challenging move, or did it just feel right?
Like, I feel like it felt right.
Yeah.
But I think when I came out here, I became even more New York. Now when I'm here, people just like, they can tell I'm from New York.
Because like, you had to bring that like that energy out here.
I had to. The last time I went back home, I ordered a beef patty on the tarmac. So I was on the plane. As soon as the wheels touched down, I loaded like the app. Like, all right, I need
first
that.
Thing.
Yeah, as soon as I get back to my dad's house. Yeah,
that's so funny. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with a Mad Happy at all, or the brand at all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Nice. Well, just a little bit more about us. I mean, we started the brand like almost 6 years ago in April. This show 2 years ago. Really just trying to create conversation around mental health, and like specifically with Optimism and like the power of positivity. I think like I grew up just like a super streetwear, you know, music, fashion, like head, all this stuff. And I think the streetwear game at the time was just like so sort of negative, in my opinion, was like super closed off. You know, I had like so many experiences of like shopping at stores and stuff, and would just feel so like judged, and like I wasn't welcome, or I wasn't cool enough, or I couldn't fit in, all these types of things. And we really wanted to create a brand that really like flipped that narrative on its head and was like super colorful and positive and inclusive, and like really around this mental health message at the time, which was the word Mad Happy. And like, to me, what it sort of means and like how we sort of embody it here is like, you know, suffering and sadness and like all these really dark things are like an inevitable part of life. And like, so many of us, and really what society has trained us to do, is like to ignore those times or act like they're not happening. And like, the beauty in it is to actually acknowledge that and like open up the door and let sadness in the room and come sit with us and chill and talk about it. And what can we learn about it? And like, that gives such a more sort of balanced life. So that's really like what
it's how you deal with it, right?
It's how you deal with it. And like, you don't deal with it by acting like it's not happening.
That's
right. So like, that's really what the name means. And yeah, so since then we've been able to build a pretty cool brand and do some cool collabs, have pop-ups all over the country. And then now has led us to like having this show and like having conversations like these to just sort of speak on our own experiences and really encourage and inspire people to share theirs.
Sweet. That was well said. That was like spot on.
Well, it's not my first time saying it, I'll tell you that. So you grew up in Brooklyn, obviously. Would love to hear just like a bit about what that upbringing was like, family life, socially, just sort of like back in the day vibes.
Brooklyn is, I would say, New York State. New York City, melting pot.
Yeah.
I want to say, I think JFK is the largest internationally flown airport in the world. That it has the most inbound flights in the world, as far as like leaving New York and going to like Europe or wherever you're going. I think that had a lot to do with, you know, growing up as a kid, it was no like one kind of kid that you played with. Everybody was multicultural. Everybody was different. Particularly where I grew up in Flatbush was really Caribbean. And my dad is Jamaican. So, like, I felt really at home all the time. You know, it's easy to go down a block and find you know, restaurants that has, you know, Jamaican food, or, you know, you hear the music in the streets, it's always like soca or reggae. That was a big influence on me, even to the point where I didn't even really know the difference between Jamaica and Flatbush, you know what I mean? Because I would hear it all the time, and I would imagine that Jamaica is like Brooklyn, you know what I mean? And my dad was like, it's not anything like that. Like, it's just, we live coincidentally in a place that's like gelled with who we are culturally. Hip hop, how that played into it too, was like, you know, as a kid, you know, we all had dreams of playing basketball and rapping and making music. I think it made it really easy coming from New York, because people knew that was the Mecca, and we knew that all these fantastic artists were from New York City. So it was really hard for you to deny that that's an ambition of yours, to want to be a rapper or, you know, do anything in music.
Yeah. Was that always sort of just like instilled in you from your youth, just because of like the culture and like where you were, that like, this is just the type
shit? I think we all did it. We all did it. We all rapped and played beats and shit like that. But I think it was like who lasts the test of time, really? Are you going to be somebody who gives up?
Yeah.
I think that in high school is probably like the pivotal moment where
it's like, all right.
You know, it was funny. I was actually telling a friend the other day, when I was in high school, I'm sure for kids now it's a lot different, but like if you were in like ninth grade and you said you rap and no one like knew you, people would make fun of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like now everybody, oh, you have a rap song? They're like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, bro, when I was like 15 and you were like, yo, I rap or I make beats, who are you? Like, it was almost like people would tease you because you're not successful, but you're a kid. How successful are you really supposed to be?
Yeah.
And now, I mean, kids go viral at ninth grade and 10th grade. So we had to pay the dues for them.
Yeah, you know? For sure. What was your family life like? Like siblings or like a parents? How were those relationships as a kid?
I have two older brothers. They're 10 and 13 years older than me.
So you're the youngest of the three?
I'm the youngest.
It's a tough spot to be.
Yeah, you know, not all the time.
Yeah.
Not all the time. I got to watch them do a lot. And it made me really aware of so much that was coming my way.
Yeah. Was it hard with like the age difference? Like, were you more like a kid brother in that way, or?
Yeah, they were around, but like they were always doing like grown people stuff. So I would like sneak in the room and like watch them play games, or like they got a shorty at the crib. I'm like trying to peek through the door.
Like another, like, right. Like they were in another level of life always. Yeah.
They were so much older than me. Yeah. You know? So by the time I became like 20, you know, my brother had already graduated from college and
been there, done that.
So yeah. They were like real guardians and like guided me to do the right
things. Were they like role models for you growing up, kind of putting you on to like
totally
musically and,
totally.
And just
both
like,
of them.
Yeah.
Both of them. My oldest brother was really much into hip hop, so and also like neo soul.
Mm-hmm.
So he put me on to like Flowetry and D'Angelo and chemistry and jazz music and a lot of hip hop stuff, Rascass and Helter Skelter and Wu-Tang. And then, like, from my dad, I got, like, reggae. My dad liked Whitney Houston and Celine Dion a lot. And my mom was all soul, Motown, Berry Gordy era, you know, Sam Cooke.
The best.
Etta James, Herbie Hancock, Sly and the Family Stone, like, George Clinton. Like, the best era to me.
Yeah. And, like, all of the hip-hop acts that you mentioned, and even, like, modern day. It's, like, it's all coming from that still. It's, like, mm-hmm. It might sound like your influences were very all over the place, but to me there's a clear through line of like it makes a lot of sense. Did you know, was it around that high school time like where you really wanted to get into music, or had that always kind of been your thing as a youth, or like when did you really realize that you wanted to start investing more time into that?
It's actually something else I was telling a friend of mine. You know, like when you try to impress a girl, right, there's like certain things you say and do, you'll be like, you'll flirt with them, or you're trying to like male peacock yourself so that girls could see that you're the shit. And one of the things that I thought was cool was that like in high school I got rid of my bed, and the bed is where you do things, you know.
Yeah.
That's where you make love, that's where you make sleep, you know.
Yeah.
I got rid of my bed because I had so many different pieces of equipment that I didn't, it took up a optimal part of my room, so
too
I was
much
like,
space, the mattress is taking too
I wanted
too
to
much
put
space.
A piano rack with three vintage, you know, whatever the hell I had at the time. I think I had a Juno 106 or something. Yeah, I did. I had a Yamaha DX7 and a Juno 106. So I already had like vintage and analog gear from like the 80s, 70s. Yeah. No one cared about that shit. So like when I knew that I was devoting that much time and the little money that I had, I was like buying sneakers and selling sneakers. I worked at Foot Locker and stuff. I was like, this is really what I want to do. And it would impress some of the shorties that would come to my crib, and other ones would be like, I can't even do anything with you. You have no bed.
Yeah.
Like, and some girls were like, that's so hot.
Yeah.
So I think at that moment in my life, I was like, wow, either way that I whatever, at this point, I can't go turning back now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, this is the dream. And by the time I graduated from high school, I fully committed myself to making music.
Yeah. And did you have support from your family and like peers at that time? Or was it more of like a big decision for you?
I was hiding a lot of it. Yeah. I was hiding a lot of it because.
Why do you think?
Because I'm good at a lot of other things that I'm sure were probably more prosperous and probably a avenue that most people would probably dream of. Like, and you have the choice of doing something like going to college, and you have the money to, or you have the time to, or the ambition to. I chose to make music, so it was almost like, why are you doing this? If this is like a step back, maybe financially.
Yeah.
Emotionally, I felt like I needed to do that, but it was hard to explain that to anybody that, you know, you need to do this. It's like, well, how are you going to make money?
Yeah.
And we're not going to put you in school to rap.
Yeah.
You know, or learn to make music.
Yeah, I was listening to you say on another show how you like feel like you grew up very fast and were like a very conscious individual from like a young age, and that clearly comes across in like after high school having to make a decision like that.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's very hard, especially if you're dealing with pressure from maybe other people, like you're saying, of taking a more traditional path, or this has a more promising future, etc. Like, how do you think you were able to sort of have the just courage and like self-belief to like make a decision like that in that time, only being 17, 18 years old?
Well, once I graduated from high school, I went to college. And
so you did still go to college when you were still a pursuing
music?
I did
the whole college shit.
Because you wanted to, or because you just felt like you had to?
My parents told me to.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, you better go to school.
Me too. And I didn't make it more than a year.
Oh, no, I did like the whole thing.
You graduated.
I went to school for design and animation,
Sick.
So, like, I, so imagine that. It's like, well, you're good at this other thing. You have a degree. Why don't you pursue that?
A whole ass degree.
And I'm like, I don't know if I really, I did it to appease you guys, really. But now, looking back, you know, over 10 years ago, I mean, you're talking about the things that I was able to do for myself, at work and working at record companies and stuff like that when I was like 22 years old, 21 years old, a young guy providing like press kits and things like that and database coding. I was like big into all this like nerdy shit.
Yeah.
And then I was like, how can I make that applicable to me? Mm. And I felt always that this would pay itself forward in the future. So even though I did that stuff and it felt like it was in vain or it was a waste of time, I'm glad that I did, because now I know how to like either assign someone the right job. Me and him are speaking the same vernacular. It's not like there's a big spacing between somebody I may hire to do something for me, especially because I have the experience and then they respect me too, you know. So
if it's like album art or like
And I did a lot of that stuff for myself too. A lot of my friends are from art schools, so it's weird. I had like my music friends, I had my friends from the street, you know what I'm saying, in my neighborhood, and I have like my art school friends, you know what I'm saying. So like, that was probably what made me feel comfortable, because I didn't have I didn't lack a space that I didn't feel like I belonged to.
Yeah.
And I probably am sure a lot of kids probably don't know where they fit in that, you know?
Yeah. Was there a moment where you sort of had to tell your family like, hey, I'm going to leave this job and actually do music full time? Or
I still remember that day. Actually, I was dating this girl. She lived in Jersey. And I remember it was snowing. I worked at Guitar Center at this time. And I remember I was leaving from Jersey to go back to New York to go to work. It was snowing. And I was moving a little slower that day. Like, I don't know what it was. I need the money. It wasn't like I was like, I wasn't good. I was good maybe emotionally, but financially I definitely was not good. I needed every paycheck I was getting.
Yeah.
But I was just moving extra slow that day. And I remember my boss was like, where are you?
You were asking for it.
And I was like, yo, I'm going to show up when I show up.
Yeah.
He was like, excuse me? I was like, I may not even show up today.
Yeah.
And I remember taking the train, coming back from New Jersey Transit. I was coming back, and my stop on my train was Beverly Road. And Atlantic Avenue is where I get off, and that's way before my stop.
Mm-hmm.
And once the Atlantic Avenue door opened, I seen it. It said, next stop. I was like, yo, you know what? I'm just gonna go home.
Yeah.
And when I went home, my boss was pissed. Like, where are you? And I just didn't answer the phone, and I told him I quit.
Yeah.
And I had three jobs at that time. I quit all those jobs that day. Wow. And my family, my mom was like, yo, what? So what are you going to do? And she said to me, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know, but I don't want to do this. You know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Were you feeling a lot of anxiety, or like, was that a very hard thing for you to do? Or I know you said that you were emotionally pretty sound. Have you always been very like secure, like in your feelings in that way of how to manage those things?
I think that a lot of insecurity is pretty normal at that age when you're trying to figure out what you want to do.
100%.
And you're trying to validate yourself, especially early 20s. I think a lot of that time you spend wondering and dreaming, and you want to like be the best. It's like this whole thing about being recognized and accepted. For me, I'm a weird guy. I kind of accepted that I'm weird, and like there's nothing wrong with that. And I need to make more definitive decisions. And I can't be, if once I say that I'm an artist, I have to fully live that. I can't like double back and be like, you know what, I'm gonna change my mind. And I think it was easier for me to do that because I accepted that I was like really different than a lot of people when I was younger.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always like that. It was definitely a time when I wanted to be like everyone else.
How were you able to accept that? Because even for me, I like definitely felt like misunderstood a lot as a kid. Like I have a really blended family background of like my biological father left me and my mom, and then we went back to Michigan. She remarried this dude. Then we moved to LA. Then his old kids from his old marriage moved. Like there was just a lot of stuff. And I feel like that sort of led to me struggling with anxiety and depression my whole life, but especially just feeling like no one understands me. I'm so different. Like all these sorts of things. How were you able to accept that like I'm weird and I'm different and like be able to say it proudly? Because as you mentioned, as a kid, it's like we just want to fit in. Like the last thing you want to do is be standing out alone at like recess or whatever.
For sure. I think I didn't mention this. My mom passed like 4 years ago, and she was really sick the majority of my life.
Mm.
That being said, you know, she was diabetic and she lost her vision when I was in high school. So along with...
So she went from seeing to then losing her vision.
Yeah, and then other health complications with kidney failure. So she was on renal dialysis as well. And I had to do that with her 3 times a week, bring her to the hospital. And I went to Helen Keller with her. So I learned Braille with her. And I'd be around people who were really sick.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I noticed about how to treat people. It was like, you know, you hang out with people who have disabilities and you treat them like they're actually like children.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was so weird to me. It's like this person is a human being, and the last thing I want you to do is speak to them in a way that makes you feel, makes them reminded that they're sick.
Yeah.
They want to have a conversation like this.
Yeah.
So what if I'm sick? Like, talk to me, what's up?
Mm-hmm.
And when I'd go there, you know, I'd be talking to, you know, someone else who's blind. I'm like, yo, what's up, Mr. Rogers? What's up? And he'd be like, yo, like, it was to have a smile that I don't really think they can freely do all the time.
Right, because, you know, like, they, Mr. Rogers, yes. Hello.
Hey, are you okay?
Yeah.
They hate that shit. Yeah, and then they walk away and they'd be like, I hate when people do that shit to me. And he's like, thanks for being a real person.
Yeah.
That really shaped me because it was like, yo, people are people, and regardless of what they're going through, we can't continue to treat them how we think that they should be treated. We should treat them as people.
Yeah.
We should treat them based on the energy that they're giving you back. It shouldn't be based on like your discomfort, because that's what it really is. It's like, you're making me uncomfortable because I recognize that something is different in you. It shouldn't be like that. It should be like, what's up?
Yeah.
How you feeling today, bro?
Yeah.
What's, why you got to speak to me in a whisper?
Yeah.
You know, and my mom would always say, I'm blind, not deaf. Why are you whispering to me? Or she'd say, how does she feel today?
Yeah.
She's like, hey, I'm right here.
Yeah.
You can ask me.
Yeah.
And that little zest, I took that shit. I was like, yo, we can't continue to speak to people like that, you know, or people. Still to this day, I see people in the street with canes, you know, and I see the red tape on the bottom. I know what that means. You know, a lot of people don't know these things. We haven't been really conditioned to really to understand how to speak and how to act around people who are disabled. You know,
totally.
Disability doesn't mean it. Actually, in a lot of ways, I learned that they are really accelerated a lot of things that I was suffering from. You know, my perspective is flawed because of my ability to have all my 5 senses all the time. These are people that have less, so they actually have perceptive value, and their perception is stronger than my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to think about, but because they can't see or they can't hear, something else about them is extremely powerful. And that person is the person you need to soak up all the knowledge to, because they, you know, my mom would be able to tell you how you look. She has no idea what the fuck you look like. That's amazing, you know?
No, it's literally like real life, like superpowers for like these people. It's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. How old were you when you started sort of having to care for her in that way?
I was probably like 14.
That's young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was that like your first, mentally, like what sort of like effect did that have on you? I'm curious for like your mental health, like how are you able to cope, or did you even really, were you conscious of mental health at that time, or was it just like, this is what I gotta do?
I don't think I knew, bro. I'm from the hood, bro. We don't talk about that shit.
Yeah,
that's not cool.
Yeah,
depression ain't cool. Being soft, being sensual, being vulnerable was not cool.
No, that's not like, yeah.
But that didn't stop me from being expressive. But I definitely was really sad watching that, and also having to explain to people over and over again, girls I was dating at the time, you know, you're a kid, but like, I'd be like, I can't come over, or I can't do some shit, and be like, why? I gotta take care of my mom. I want to be my mom today. Like, yo, grow up.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm not gonna fucking explain to this girl why. It's not your business. Or some people would think that I was embellishing it.
Yeah.
But then they come over and they'd be like, this is a real situation. I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
But because
that's
of my nature,
I said
every
I couldn't
day,
come.
Yeah. Right. My nature every day, no one be able to tell that that's what was happening in my house, because none of us looked at my mom or anybody. You know, my uncle was pretty sick too. It wasn't unfamiliar to me, but did I think I was depressed? At some point, yeah. But I don't think it was based on my mom. I think it was based on, kind of like you said earlier, how I was dealing with some of the stuff that was happening, and then the girls I was dating were not understanding. I think that they really were, thought I was hiding behind some of that stuff.
When was the moment for you in your life where you realized that mental health is a real thing?
I was going to say something stupid like yesterday, but no.
Well, I just think it's so interesting how you say, like, you know, I'm from the hood, mental health isn't a thing at all. It's like my experience is so opposite. Like, my mom threw my ass in therapy at 7 years old. And,
I've been
you know, like, talking about my feelings and breaking all this shit down and self-reflecting and all this for, like, as long as I can remember. So, like, I think it's super awesome if, like, was there a moment for you in your adult life where you're like, oh, wow, this is actually real. Or, like, I actually can't just, like, pretend like this shit isn't going on, or like all these things happen in my life and it's having an effect that like is actually like manifesting in some real way.
To be honest, bro, I don't really think, I think by the time I started to make music and go on tours when that really started to make sense to me.
Mainly, you probably put a lot of those experiences into the art, obviously.
Bro, I mean, I want to say J. Cole has a line that says something similar to, I step on stage and the fans know me better than I know myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know that. Just to share my life on the stage in front of strangers who know far too well.
Too well.
And that's the danger. Know me better than I know myself. Yeah,
that's crazy. Yeah. Because in those moments,
it's a great bar.
You really, and those kind of things don't make sense to you until you have that moment where, you know, you're about to say something and something's about to come out of your mouth and you feel like you're going to cry. And it's not because you're like, you just missed something.
It's like, wait,
Something about you is broken and now you have to like, make all these people smile and feel what you know, get their money's worth.
Yeah.
But you may be struggling with something, you know. So to me, I realized when I was on tour so much that I was like, damn, yo, the worst thing that could happen to me right now is that somebody calls me and tells me my mom is gone. And that fucked me up for years, bro. Like, and it didn't happen. So by the grace of God, that never happened. Other things have happened. Coming home, you know, finding out my cousin died and shit like that. And, you know, a mom's loss is a lot stronger.
Yeah.
But I would say when I started touring, that's when I really started to understand the importance of mental health. Because all I had was the little things that I packed in my bag while I was gone for 3 months. And the things that I would start packing after I became a more proficient tour guy or whatever the fuck. I would carry pictures of my family and shit. And I'm like, oh, this is what mental health is, bro. Yeah. Like, this is fire. Like, let me bring something that reminds me of my pops. I got my dad's ring on right now. Like, let me do things that make me feel like I'm attached to the people that I love, you know? And regardless of how far I am, like, they're with me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of the beauty about mental health. And obviously, it's been stigmatized so much, like, especially in the Black community, obviously. But, like, we only think about it as, like, you're in like the loony bin, or you're like the person who's dancing and screaming on the street, or like, right. Like, it has to be so like
left
of like this clinical, like almost like psychopathic way. And like, we don't realize like mental health means happiness too, and like positivity and excitement and joy, and like that's the full spectrum of all this. Like, so even for you, like, who wasn't conscious of mental health, like you're making music and art and all these things, like that's your mental health. Like the fool who's cooking or dancing or,
oh yeah,
or like pooping or whatever it is, it's like mental health will find a way in all of our lives, whether we're even conscious of it or not. And mm-hmm. like that's the beauty of like it affects all of us, and yet like only a small percentage of people even really like acknowledge it or like work on it. And like
yeah.
that's what I truly think is like so dope about it. It's like the same thing for like, you know, if you have a body, like physical health is a part of your life. It's like if you have a mind, mental health is a part of your life. Period. Yeah,
that's a fact.
Yeah.
And the dependency on other people, I think I struggled with that for a long time too. You know, I was quite vulnerable the past couple of years of my life, you
yeah.
know, as now as a grown ass man.
Yeah.
And I feel like I maybe didn't come to terms with, like, you know, I definitely think the loss of my mother affected me in a positive way mm-hmm. more than a negative way, which mm-hmm. is extremely hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I do believe that it became, once again, what you said, it's how I dealt with it. And I think whether you believe in spirituality or religion or not, when somebody goes away, I think it's kind of silly to just be like, and they're gone. It's like, nah, bro. You ever notice that when grandma's gone or where your aunt is gone or somebody you care about, you start smelling their perfume, or like, damn, you start dressing like them, or you start talking like them, or some part of your process starts changing because their whole life cycle was, you know, expounding to you. And mm-hmm. now you become so much of them that like you are them, and you walk with them, and they say, damn, you really are your father's son, or you really are your mom's son. And you start looking like them more, and then you yeah. start picking up their habits and shit. This shit is crazy, yeah. you know?
Yeah, I mean, they trained us with everything that we know. Catch me up to just when you quit those three jobs in the one day. Like, what happens then? Like, how soon into that, like, do you guys kind of form, like, the zombies and whatnot? Yeah. Or, like, how does everything, like, transpire after that moment?
I mean, how free can we talk about stuff? We can talk about acid and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So, like, man, like, let me tell you, man, if they were here right now, I don't know if they tell the same story because they were on acid, but I still remember, I forgot what the hell I was doing. I was doing some suitish job, something else.
You know, random
some shit to make money. And I remember I was coming back on the block, and I remember Meech and Juice had come back, and their eyes just look fucking crazy, bro. And I was like, yo, what the fuck? But they were so happy. And I was like, yo, what the fuck? And I didn't have any, I mean, the word acid alone is just so intimidating. It's just like burn.
Yeah.
Like pain, death. And this is like the opposite of how these guys were feeling. So
yeah.
any type of inclination that I had that it was bad, or like the dare shirts and shit,
mm-hmm.
you're dispelling it right now. Look how happy you guys are.
Yeah.
Not that it's like a synthetic happiness, but it seemed very like recreational.
Just like blissed out.
And blissed yeah. out. And yeah. I was like, and they started telling me all these shit, and we were reading these books and spirit science and like Celestine prophecy and like all these like really deep things. And they were like existentialism, and it wasn't just like, I'm going to do drugs and get high.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys introduced this shit to me, and it changed my life, because even though I wasn't doing acid, I understood it, and I never lived in judgment. So soon after I quit those jobs, we started making music as a group
mm-hmm.
without anything being official.
You guys been like friends for like
forever? I've known Meech since I was 4 years old.
Right. So like fully grew up together.
It's fully. He grew up in the same block as me.
Yeah.
So I was always making music. He would always come over when I'm making beats. We would always watch Rap City. We always watch movies together. We always play video games. We always have toys and shit like that. So it was really transformative and easy. And I would say maybe like a year after that, we had started working on a drugs mixtape. I put out my project, Almost Remember It, I think in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time the Flatbush Zombies had to feature, because they featured on my song Sleep. And I made the beat and we did the song. I performed at the New Eureka Poets Cafe. And then all of my footwork as a solo artist started to kind of dwindle away because of the fact that the group started to pick up traction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay with that, because not only did I love them, I love what we were doing.
Mm.
And by the time we did Drugs, you know, people were blogging it and shit, and it was like a big deal. And then when we did Better Off Dead, we opened up Coachella from a mixtape.
It's crazy.
And like, I've never heard of that. Like,
no.
I don't think it was hype. I think it was people were like, who the fuck are these crazy guys from Brooklyn?
Yeah.
And that's changed everything.
What do you think it was about like your sound or just energy like that you guys brought that was able to like really get so much energy like so quick off the bat?
We were unapologetically us.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I don't do acid. That's it.
Yeah.
And Meech was like, I do acid.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
Juice is like, I do acid and I smoke really good weed.
Yeah.
So it's like you got like a three-headed monster of like three people that fully know themselves. And regardless of what you feel about anything we're talking about, you probably resonate with one of us.
Yeah.
You know, we're actually three, as a producer, I noticed this immediately. We have three timbres of voice. My voice is right in between. Mm. I'm right in between. Even flow-wise, I'm right in between. I can rap fast and slow.
Mm-hmm.
Meech's voice is very deep. And then Juice's voice is very high.
Yeah.
So when all the three people say, fuck the police together, that shit resonated. It was so profound.
It's a Crosby, Stills, and Nash harmony, right?
You know what I mean? Like, this is like a real harmony. And yeah. We didn't even, I mean, none of this was taught. It was just the way it's... You meet people and these people change your life. You never thought we were kids, we would ever be that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, same thing for us here. Me and my two partners, none of us ever went to fashion school. Two out of the three of us didn't graduate college. Like, it's like, you know, there's no like manual of like how to do this shit. You just really follow your heart and like what you're interested in and like actually be authentic with the art that you want to create. And then like, you know, see what the people think and like, and take it from there. Facts. What year was that, a Coachella performance?
We put out Better Off Dead in 2013. So it was the year that Outkast came back.
Okay, shit. And was that like just an insane moment for you guys? Like, what did that feel like?
Man, I still think about it.
Was that like the we made it moment or like was there a moment?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. I was like, you can't tell us anything. I don't care.
Palm Springs right now.
Bro, like you can't. We had a tour bus for the first time. Like, that was our first real headline tour. You know, we toured with Bodega Bam. Shout out to the Tam Boys. You know, that was our first time ever doing it. And we were all touring with no album.
Yeah.
And at this time in New York City, you had a lot of upcoming artists. Even though if these people weren't from New York, we were always touring together or doing stuff together, from Danny Brown to A-Track to A$AP Rocky to Action Bronson to Flostradamus to LP. Like,
yeah,
to World's Fair. You know, I don't want to leave anybody out to hear this and think I, but it was so many people.
Yeah.
In this like resurgence of music.
Really. Yeah. Yeah. What was it like about that time? Cause like, that's when I first heard about you guys. Like, one of my best friends, from New York, I remember in like 10th or 11th grade, like 2010, 11 is like when he put me on to like ASAP Mob, you guys, Pro Era,
Shop
Underachievers, like all that. Like, I feel like it was just such a, to say it's only like 10, 11 years ago is crazy. Cause to me it feels like another lifetime. Mm-hmm. Truly. Like, what do you think it was about that era and like sound that just sort of like was such a lightning in a bottle? Like,
I'll tell you what moment. It is. It was a shift. It was a shift, especially for Beast Coast. So you got the Underachievers, you have Flabber Zombies, you have Pro Era.
Yeah.
Very pivotal moment for all of us. We were around kind of the same age, and I think that people will find out about like real spirituality. And I don't know what the hell, maybe it was post 9/11. People were trying to really grip onto something that seemed like it had a lot of answers for questions that they had. And I think that they listened to us because we questioned things too.
Mm.
You know, some of the shit that we say or said, I'm sure people were just like, you're not supposed to say that.
Mm.
And to today's time, most of the shit you feel and say, a lot of people will pull receipts on you and try to ruin your life because you asked a question.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised as a Christian person. I was never supposed to ask about the existence of God. I was trained to do that. It was like, you know, you believe in something so faithfully that you can't have an alternative. And we were the opposite of that. I was just, you know, Meech has one line. He said, fuck religion, because religion is division. So if you take the word fuck religion, it's going to piss a lot of people off. But you have to look at what he's saying. He's saying it's like, if you're using religion to divide us, then we don't need it.
Religion is... caused the death of millions of people
and jihads and terrible things that's happened. So we have allegiance to something that's actually hurting us in a lot of ways. It brings a lot of spirituality and purpose. But to me, we were like the first people of our generation to really say things like that. You know, we had NWAs, we had Dead Prezes, we had Onyx, we had a lot of dope acts that came way before us, Eminem, that would say things that's like, yo, you're not supposed to say that, bro. And it's like, but this is coming from someone intelligent, so you can't say this is like respectfully the crazy person in the street. This
it's
is someone
ignorant. Yeah,
this is someone who sat here and is garnishing a talent, that sat here and writing something down, and then they sat there and recorded it to a beat, and they sat there and listened to that word over and over again. People don't think about that.
Yeah,
you think that someone that has really, really ill intentions is gonna go that far to promote a message that sucks?
Yeah.
They really believe that thing, you know? So,
yeah. I feel like it's super interesting because even if you look at like you know, let's say like the rise of like rock and roll or like soul in like late 60s, early 70s, it's all of that like counterculture, like anti-establishment sort of messaging that's so popular.
Sonic
and then,
Youth.
Yeah,
on,
when
man.
Like hip-hop started, you know, like the same thing like you're saying, like Wu-Tang and like NWA and stuff sort of had that same sort of like anti-establishment message. But then hip-hop got so popular and started making so much money, it's like then when I think about when I was really growing up, like Ye, Hove, Wayne, like
oh yeah,
Lupe, like, well, I guess Lupe's more conscious, but like all those guys, then it just became about like money, cars, and like material things. And then to your point is like spot on of like it was like an in-between era of hip-hop where there really wasn't like, you know, Kendrick hadn't really popped yet, like right. A Good Kid dropped in 2012. It was like the, and that was West Coast anyways, but like the conscious, more like anti, like it's really almost like rock and roll.
It was punk shit.
Yeah, like it was punk shit, back into hip hop, which totally didn't like exist at the time. Like,
not at all, bro.
It makes total sense.
Not at all. And I'm the last person to really take stake or claim of something that I didn't do, and just be like, I'm the shit. But come on, man. Like, I would know it. I love music. If there was out there before we did it, I would have found it. It wasn't people our age doing that shit. It was our OGs, you know, like. You know, I grew up listening to rock music and listening like Korn and like,
yeah,
bro, like
System and like
System.
All that shit, bro.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The shit they were fucking saying. I'm like, you gonna excommunicate me because of what I said? Right. This dude said some wild
makes
shit.
Fuck the Police look like a PG song. Yeah.
What? Life is a waterfall. You drink from the rivers and turn around and put up a wall. Like the song Boom by System of a Down is one of the craziest songs. He's just like saying all these like really profound things about war and how they ruin the world, and he just follows it up by saying boom 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 boom. It takes away from like, it's a juxtaposition that's like genius.
Yeah,
it's like, well, how do we grab people with a message that's trivial because it has to be a bit complex and on the ear, like it has to be something that maybe gets somebody to feel uncomfortable, but we need to make it catchy enough to make you want to dance to it or make you put your hands up. You know, there's the art to that.
I saw this video this morning on Twitter. It was Rick Rubin, and he was talking about when they were working on Chop Suey and this part in the bridge. And what's the vocalist's name again?
Serge.
Serge. He's like I have no lyrics for this. I don't know what to say or whatever. And Rick is like, you see that wall over there? Like, pick any book off the wall, open it up to a random page, and read me the first thing that you see. So he does it, and verbatim, those are the bars that they use in the song. And it's the part like, forsaken me, but like, and I was just like, that is the craziest shit I've ever heard, and just like, so epic.
That busts my head,
dude. It's crazy.
Have you seen the Gorillaz one?
I'll show it to you after we get off.
The Gorillaz.
It was like just the.
Dun, dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. I actually heard that story because I was in London years ago, and I was working with these guys who like part of Senseless Things, and I'm like a big Damon fan from Senseless Things to Blur. And I was so curious. I had so many questions about the Gorillaz existence. I'm a huge Gorillaz fan.
Yeah.
And he told me that shit. So when I saw the little clip online, I was like, I knew that.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't a lie. It came from the source. But he was like, yo, that shit came from like a toy, basically.
Yeah. And that, like, that's my favorite messaging of like any, like, it's just anyone can do it. It's not like, you know, don't take yourself too seriously in life. Like, nothing is like rocket science. Like, have fun and like use what life is giving you just like right in front of you. And it can be the biggest like thing in the world,
period.
Yeah No, that's fire. I guess what as you guys really start to pop off like with the Zombies, I'm curious like what that was like for you, obviously being the producer, and then, you know, as the career continued to evolve, you know, I don't think like the group maybe had the longevity that like a lot of people might have expected. Like, how did that sort of pan out once you guys really started reaching success, and like what sort of personal effects like was it having on you?
I'd say once we did our debut album 3001, I don't remember the exact statistic, but it was on Billboard, and I think it was number one independent album in the country. I'm not saying if I got that wrong or not.
Yeah.
At that point, man, that could have been it. I would have been fine with that. Like,
I'm good to go.
I'm good to go. Like, I listen to music my whole life. I know people who never achieved that.
Yeah.
You know, and let alone with their best friends. It's just, I was okay with that. You know, once we did that, we did Vacation in Hell. We did Clockwork. The Clockwork Indigo tour with our brothers Underachievers, and once we did that tour, I was like, we wore all white every day for an entire tour. So all of us had like mad pairs of Air Force Ones, and like we're like steaming our clothes and shit every day to jump up and down for these kids, you know what I'm saying? And like that alone, it felt like, man, like I don't care if we sell any more records. And then we do Vacation in Hell. I think we dropped Vacation Hell the same day Cardi B did her debut album. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, well, we're done.
Yeah.
we're not gonna be her. She's too popping.
Yeah.
We had to kind of.
That's almost like the new era, especially from like the same sort of
exactly
tri-state area. Obviously, like
I want to say Saba did his album too.
Yeah.
Shout out to Saba, because I actually, when I met him, I told him, I was like, you know, I'd admit to you, I didn't know who you were, but people would always say Saba or Flabber Zombies, pick one. And I'm like, why you got to do that? And who the fuck is this guy? And when I listened to it, I was like, oh, I see why. And he was, you know, from Chicago. He's on the same.
Yeah, he can spit.
You know, and I was happy to know that we were in the same conversation in the mouth of someone who respects the art too, and he's a producer too. His shit is dope.
Yeah.
So by the time I'm talking about 2018, Vacation in Hell, you know, my life is so different.
Yeah.
Everything that I knew about how to engage people changed. People treated me so different. People treated us different.
Did you like that, or it was?
I didn't.
Yeah.
I still don't like the shit. I don't like. I like genuine exchange of energy. And I think that I became really good at my bullshit meter just became impeccable. Because it's like, yo, you don't care. And a lot of people, to what you said earlier, they thought we were some joke.
Yeah.
Like, we're some fucking weird drug addicts or some shit. And I'm just like, yo, not only are we smarter than you think, the person producing this music is literally, I'm such a fan of music, not just hip-hop music. I'm a fan of art.
Yeah,
you're gonna be, if you're competing with us, you're gonna get in line, bro, because we're gonna be here for a long time. And I knew, you know, once we did that second album, I produced for 9 different artists on the same album. So it was Bun B, Portugal the Man, Jadakiss, Denzel Curry, Dave B. Those are all artists from different eras of music and when you time. Say, and
Jadakiss and Portugal the Man is just like,
and it came from just the things that we felt like resonated to, and what I felt I could do as a producer to offer to people. And even then, that was an accomplishment that I didn't care if it sold anything. I just wanted to prove to people that I'm a multifaceted producer, and we're a group that can really work with anybody. As long as we were passionate about what we were talking about, we were gonna do it.
Yeah, I feel like it. I can sense your just like authenticity and like how genuine you want like your interactions to be. That like fame can be tough, and like the music industry, especially, I imagine, has like not ideal for like the type of relationships and like energy that like you try and cultivate. It seems
everybody. Oh, shout out to ASAP 12e. He was another person on there too.
Yeah.
So what's the other? Joey Badass. Exactly. So like, yeah. If it wasn't my friend, I was friends with John Gourley. John Gourley's my friend from Portugal the Man. Like, these are my friends. Dave B was a homie. Like, these are relationships that, like, you know, through the music, we become better friends. Through working with, you know, Bun B. Bun B called me before he did his verse, you know? Like, these are people who already walked this path before. And they wanted to pass a torch to us. And I felt honored to be able to, like, even share that space with them.
Yeah.
And they trusted me that I would make them sound and look good, you know, especially for, we're representing this generation of artists too.
Yeah. What was it like to start to do some of those collaborations? I mean, even to work with like the RZA or like other people like that that you've obviously looked up to for so long, like how were those experiences, and like what were you able to learn from some of those people?
The RZA one is really crazy, man, because I told him, I'm like, you know, my oldest brother, he would lock me in the room when we were kids, and he's like, yo, I'm about to fart. I'm gonna lock the door. If you can say the beginning of Protect Your Neck before Inspector Deck raps, I'll let you out the room. Otherwise, you gotta smell this fart. And I had to remember that shit.
It's like
that
was, pledging a frat.
Yo, bro. it was like an initiation for me. And I told him, like, you kind of fucked me up as a kid, bro, because that's like, maybe that's why I love music so much. And he was like, damn, I never thought about that. I would just fuck with you. But like the whole skit thing, even before the rap started, he was really showing me how to produce. Like,
yeah.
Eric, this is so important that even before the song starts, look how like this whole minute of stuff that's going on there. And of course, as the fart is coming into my lungs, I'm saying like, yo, I got to remember this perfectly because I don't want to be in this situation anymore. Meeting RZA was crazy, bro, because it was like, I've seen this face so many times my whole life, and now we're in a space where I could be myself. And I really feel like his enthusiasm for music and movies was the same thing as me. It was like, I had to meet this man because he's created some of my favorite songs of all time. And
yeah,
it's very easy for someone who's insecure to be like, I don't belong here.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point in my life, maybe if I met him earlier, I would have said that too. But by the time that I had met him, I was like, yo, we here, man. Let's make some shit.
Yeah.
I respectfully, I'm not intimidated to work with any person.
Yeah.
You know, but I used to be that guy. I will bring up the work with Portugal the Man. Because I was a big, big, big fan in college, I was really like excited to meet them, but I didn't know where it would go. And Danger Mouse actually produced the original record that I had flipped for our album.
Mm-hmm.
That was super intimidating. I told John, I'm like, yo. He's like, Danger Mouse is going to give you a call. I said, excuse me? My hands were like, yo, what do you mean, bro? Like, he's like, yeah, this guy's going to call you. The conversation never happened. It didn't have to happen. I guess the last version of it that I sent back, he enjoyed so much we used it. But yeah, working with any person, I just bring up RZA or Danger Mouse because these are guys that already have walked this path. They set precedence for guys like me to even make money and to make influence in music, you know?
Yeah. What sort of changed for you? Was it anything actually that you did that made you more secure to be comfortable in any room? Or was it just like an overtime thing? Because I think definitely, mm-hmm. like even me, like I struggle with imposter syndrome a lot of like, you know, I don't have the degree on the wall or mm-hmm. the resume or like all these things that I make up in my mind that are like bullshit. But sometimes I feel like they're important and mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, I just got so lucky. All this shit just happened or whatever. How were you able to sort of feel secure in yourself in that way?
I just said, God doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
If I was here, I didn't sneak in this bitch. I can't continue to question so much before I'm actually just living in my reality. And I think too many accidents have been beautiful for me to just think that they were by chance.
Mm.
You know, my entire life, I've had signs from all types of things that told me that I'm supposed to be doing this. You know, from the song 222 that I have has not even hit streaming platforms. I released a song in 2013. I've seen the tattoo of this triangle that I drew with three twos in it hundreds of times. I'm in a band called Flabber Zombies. I've seen the Flabber Zombies logo just as many times. Yeah. This is a song that's never made $1 from streaming. How the fuck did I do that? How? I've had people tell me that's their favorite Flabber Zombie song. Doesn't have anybody else on it but me and Bridget.
Yeah.
So was that an accident? Can I sit here? I didn't know anything about angel numbers or numerology. People like, man, you're so deep that you were able to recognize that. I had no idea, you know? Yeah. I know about that shit now. And I know I saw that or I had the inclination to use that numerology based on, you know, where I was aligned that day. It was almost like it chose me.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that have power, happened. Yeah, it that's why it was in front of me. It's not because I was aware of the power before I named it that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really what it was. I had to keep paying attention to those things and keep saying to myself, well, Eric, this ain't happened to you because it was by accident. It's because you're supposed to.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I got, like, sober, like, 5 years ago. So
congrats, bro.
Thank you, brother. Going into, like, recovery and, like, so much of it is that, like, spirituality and like higher power and just sort of like surrendering and trusting. And like now I'm the same way of like, you know, I'll be out eating or whatever and like seeing someone wearing like a Mad Happy hoodie or like whatever, a tee, and like I'll see it out there in public all the time. And like to me that gives me sort of like the reassurance that it's like greater than myself, and to like stop taking myself so seriously mm-hmm. and just, you know, trust that I'm supposed to be where I am and just like continue to do it. And like as long as I'm living with integrity and, you know, like staying off my bottom lines and just sort of like being the person of myself that I know I'm supposed to be, it's like I don't need to get so like in my head of like what I deserve or like what I'm worth or like any of that shit.
I'm glad you said that, man.
Yeah,
because a lot of people, they don't ever learn that.
Yeah,
you know, they may pass away never learning what you just said.
Yeah,
you know.
No, and I mean it's just like I've been learning so hard of just like it. I wake up in the morning and I like, I have value, even if I haven't done anything yet. And like, it reminds me of what you were saying about like the other people with disabilities, like with your mom, of just like, you know, we all have shit that's wrong. It's just like, it doesn't take anything away from like us being a human being or at like all. Having value. It's not about what your job is, how many followers you had, like any of those things. And like the more I can stay in that and like less caught up in like all this 2023 bullshit, it's like the just the like that more sober and like healthier I can feel.
Bro, I think a healthy dose of delusion is needed.
Yeah.
People, you can argue with me. I'm delusional as fuck sometimes, bro.
Yeah.
I can't be rooted in reality all the time. If I watch the news every day, I'd be sitting rocking in a corner in a room somewhere. It's just like, sometimes I just got to turn my PlayStation on and act like this is the most important thing ever, is to beat this guy's ass online. Like,
yeah.
I have to be that way. And as a creative, I think I'm people are a little bit more lenient to maybe a habit of mine that's not the best, because I have to be a little confusing and a little weird in order to do my job.
Yeah, which is like always be poking the bear.
Yeah, like because like all my favorite artists are just weirdos.
Yeah,
they just don't make sense to somebody. And you know, I love Jim Carrey. You know, Jim Carrey is one of my favorite actors of all time, and I think he's played so many roles that his identity is probably like, his name is James. Like, when he was Andy Kaufman, he wanted to answer this to Andy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the word genius, people use it so much now because it's so cool. Everybody's a genius. Somebody that sells a bunch of records is a genius. That's not, genius is not deemed by self. Genius is deemed by other people. I don't think you're aware of your genius because your reality is your own.
Yeah. Your it's also not deemed by sales or
at
streams.
All. It has nothing to do with that shit.
Yeah.
A genius is literally somebody that's like, you're so unique. I can't describe you. I can't put you in a box. I don't understand how you could accomplish this. And actually, I was telling somebody yesterday, if we're in a, you know, the room we're in is all white, right? But say if this room was like a beautiful collage or some type of mural that was in this room we're recording mm-hmm. this in right now, then we all acknowledge that as beautiful art. Art is subjective, so we say like, okay, Rembrandt is better than Kandinsky or whatever. That's your fucking opinion.
Yeah.
But what we can't argue about is time, right? That's how you know this is genius. If this room was beautifully painted, we can all admit that this is nice art. But then if you told me, hey, Eric, the dude who painted this did it in 45 seconds, I'd be like, shit.
Yeah.
I'd look at this wall even deeper.
Yeah.
How did the art change? Art didn't change.
Yeah.
You just realize how genius it is.
Yeah.
Because of time. The time attached to it made it. Now I have a different weight and understanding of what I'm looking at. The art is better because I have context. And I think that's how we judge genius. It shouldn't be deemed on sales and shit like that, because that just means all a famous person is, bro, is a person that takes credit for like 30 people's work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not.
Damn.
I'm not a celeb. I'm not, you know, I'm just Eric, man.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be Eric, the architect, if I didn't have all the great people that work with me and for me, too.
Yeah.
I just took the credit.
Yeah.
So I can't call myself a genius. So when people say that shit about me, anyone else, it's just like, I could never say that about myself.
Yeah.
The only way that I can do that is to continue to be the best me and hope that the influence I have makes people happy.
Yeah.
You know,
someone who I was thinking a lot about when you were just speaking is like Three Stacks, of like someone who I've always looked up to, of like,
come on,
you talk about weird, or just like you see the viral come things on. That pop up on Twitter, like, you know, playing the flute, dressing like a hobo, just like whatever, like standing on the street corner. It's like the same reason why you said you guys popped off of like the unapologetically yourself. Like, to me, that's someone who, like, you know, has won the Grammy for best album of the year, like come not on. Just rap album of the year, like any accolade under the sun, but is still constantly like curious and pushing and not caring about what other people think and doing all these things that are quote unquote weird. But like, to me, that's like the North Star of like,
yes,
individuality and like, you know, constantly being uncomfortable and like thriving in that.
Yeah. And we need those guys, man. We need their heroes, man. We need Larry David.
Yeah.
You know, we need Three Stacks.
Facts,
we,
bro.
I mean, there's a whole list of people. We need Anthony Kiedis.
Yeah.
You know, we need these fucking guys to just
be
themselves.
You ever read his books?
I started reading Scar Tissue on a tour. And
it's the best, bro.
I didn't finish it.
That was like the first book I ever like actually read, like not for school at like 17 or whatever. And it just like,
I want to read this shit.
Voluntary reading. Yeah. What's next for you? I mean, as you think about like music and your career now, I know you moved to LA, you said like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
How has that sort of shift in your you know, sort of goals or what you want for yourself been?
Oh, man. Moving here, like I said, it changed my life. You know, I think the trajectory where I was going was probably pretty predictable considering the group has had so much momentum, you know, and the times we were kind of speaking about. And I think that I'm embarking on a second wind of life.
Yeah. You guys like sit down and make a conscious decision of like, you know, let's sort of go on hiatus or like maybe it's time for a new chapter? Or
I think we all experienced a slight extreme loss within the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And I think that
sort of put things into perspective.
It was kind of like there's music shit, there's life shit, there's rap shit. These are my brothers. So nothing is ever going to come between our love for each other.
Yeah.
Don't matter if music is coming out or not coming out.
That's beautiful.
And that's the way that I will always ride for them, and they feel the same about me. I think that coming here, I wanted to prove something different that I haven't proved. I proved a lot by being in the Zombies for this long. I feel like I did that. And we've done so much to help a lot of people. We've influenced a lot of people, and I really, truly believe we don't get enough credit for that.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I think that life throws these things at you, and maybe we'll have VH1 driven one day. I always say that. They bring it back and shit. Like, we could tell the story, but like, I think that we're talking about a second wind of a career for me, particularly. I think that the album that I'm about to drop is going to change a lot about what I think people expect independent artists to be able to do.
Yeah.
I think that there's so much that is there for us that can be harnessed and I feel like we could be more influential than we ever have been, you know, because people are lacking the thing that to me is like the Waynes and the 50 Cents. When they came out, they changed music. When T-Pain came out, he changed music.
Totally.
And I want to change music.
Yeah.
You know, I want people to feel like they can be anybody they want to be. I want people to feel comfortable in the skin they're in. I want people to understand that music is just not, there's a different, respectfully, there's a difference between the guy that took 3 years to make this new album and the guy that just has SoundCloud links and just has a USB microphone. There's no disrespect to him, but I don't want to be in the same tier or even thought about like that because I take it so seriously.
Yeah.
It's so much my lifeblood. It's so much my job.
Yeah.
I love it so much that when you press play, I want you to be like, God damn.
Yeah.
I was missing this.
Yeah.
I think that that's where I'm headed. I think that this next album is going to set precedence for the rest of my career and the rest of my life, you know?
Does it bother you that, like, the emergence of just, like, the sort of how accessible it is to sort of, like, bang out the art in that way that, to me, it sort of, like, lost the integrity of, like, the multi-year process of, like, the Kendricks and Solanges and, like, you know, the ones who it's like, oh, if this is coming, I know this is, like, a big thing.
I fucking hate the fast shit. I hate it. It sucks.
Yeah.
I never want to throw another artist under the bus, but I think
that, why do you like, think that whole, why do you think know, people like it so much?
Because they're stupid.
Yeah.
Because people are stupid, man. People like anything.
Yeah.
I've learned that.
Just like
within the
like
last couple years, I realized people just like anything, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's not cool. You don't even think it's cool. You think it's cool because this guy said it's cool.
Yeah.
Well, what about like one of my favorite eras? We talk about Outkast. You got Stank on ya. You got Jill Scott, Erykah Badu, D'Angelo.
Lauren,
fuck? Those three people alone, and they all recorded these albums in the same studio at the same time. And we have some of the best, like Water for Chocolate, Common. Like, all of these are pivotal artists. I don't know if they give a fuck about how much records they would sell, but all those artists have longevity. That's why I think that they still can exist. That's why they can delve into acting and do speeches, and people look up to them so much because
the respect
is there forever.
Yeah.
People now, I feel like you just dye your hair or date someone cool and it's just, that's enough for people.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about the media and tabloids and paparazzi. I've never looked at those little, you know, when you go to the supermarket, you see those shitty magazines and
pop.
Yeah. And they're like right by the Coca-Cola machine. And I'm like, who the fuck buys this? And says like, yo, this is really important to me.
This is it. Yeah.
You know, and it'd be like a Bible or something like that next to you. Like, what is going on? Like, how is this in the same place that we spend money every day?
Yeah.
This is the type of shit that I would think, bro, and feel so weird because I'd be like, am I just my eyes open more than the people?
Yeah.
Or am I just like hypersensitive? Or, you know, we're just duped by all these things. And I think that I'm just not easily impressed anymore. Yeah. Maybe like I'm just getting older or my perspective is just different.
Yeah, that's sort of like how I think with this whole like mental health shit is like sometimes I almost wish that like,
oh man,
that like I never opened that door for myself. And I'm just like, I see all these people out here and it just like makes me think of like ignorance is bliss in that way of like, you know, all these people just racking up streams for whoever, just like feeling good, never thinking about shit. And I'm just like, it's such a, like, it's such an easier life on the surface, but like I obviously crave that, like, you know, depth and authenticity and actually like introspection in that way. Mm-hmm. But I can't even imagine how for you, like, just being in the actual industry, how frustrating that could be, because it's like we're not really competing with like the Fashion Novas or Zaras, right? Or like we're pumping out that fast fashion, but yeah, it's a little bit different in the music game.
I want to say even when Kanye did Crack Music,
yeah,
him and Game, I always thought that that song had like a triple or quadruple entendre meaning, because it's like that's how we treated it.
Yeah,
in the 90s in New York, the crack and HIV was so fucking bad. I'm 10 years old, you know, 19, I was born in 88, so like I'm like 12 years old and seeing people sell crack, seeing people addicted to drugs. By the time I was in college, I seen people do crack, selling crack in Harlem, you know what I'm saying? And like this shit, it was an epidemic before anything else. However you deem it, is just like this is something that people are still incarcerated for sales and shit they did at that time. To know that weed was being sold at the same time and somebody's still in jail for that same shit, it's just like this is two different things. What it did to our community is way different. Why are they seeing any type of similar jail time, or why this person still in jail is crazy to me. So the fastness, the eagerness to sell the crack, to fuck somebody's life up, because you will. It's how you treat music sometimes.
Yeah.
Just like, put that shit out there.
It's a quick
somebody's hit. Gonna like it. That's bullshit. That is dumb. I don't like that way of making music. Yo, think about what the fuck you're doing, bro.
Yeah.
I know, and whatever, we do an interview. I know people have done that shit, and they feel horrible to do that, because they know they're gonna ruin this person's life. To me, as a musician, you have that same level of responsibility. If you're gonna push and profess a message that you know is negative, or you know you can't be upset that people resonate with it and do something destructive or bad, you did it well knowingly that that is a possibility. And I think that to do that, if one artist does that, it's fine. You know, that's that guy. He's the one. The whole music industry can't be occupied by that kind of attitude. It should be the Whitney Houstons and, you know, the Selenas. Like, we're going to sit and curate this artist and teach them how to make music and how to talk and how to do this shit before they even, bro, these, I really feel like it's the opposite. It's like, this person looks cool. Let's teach him how to make music. What the hell is that?
Like, yeah, like, you should make songs now. Like,
you got me. I had no bed.
Yeah.
What? I had no bed. How you think I'm going to feel next to this guy? This guy, you have four beds.
Yeah. I was watching the, like the Juice WRLD documentary, and like, I had never really listened to him as like a little bit young for me, but like just the pure numbers that he was doing, I was just like blown away. And to me, when you're speaking, that's like a perfect example of just like the message is just not there and is not like healthy, that I feel like the way that it's sort of creating this environment for the fans of like not really having something substantial to like hold on and like look up to. And then obviously, you know, ended up killing him tragically. And like, I just have a hard time with like that being like the it sort of like lane and like the actual like depth that it's lacking in terms of like giving us something more to just like bang in the whip or like, you know, bump at a club or something like that. So, I don't know.
I love all that shit too. That's the worst part. I'm a victim of it.
No, you watch, it's like, holy shit, he never wrote anything down and he just goes and it's like a 12-minute freestyle. Like,
it's crazy.
That's fucking incredible.
It's crazy.
Like, and talented.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, I don't know. The game's just in a weird place, I feel like.
We need heroes.
Yeah.
We need heroes, you know? And I don't think that person got to be 48 years old and shit. It could be this new legion of kids. It could be like what we were, you know, in 2012, 2013. We could be the, you know, that I think you have to do the research. You know, I think a lot of the era now have all the answers because the internet is so fast.
Boom.
So I don't think the experience is as important to them.
Yeah. There's no like exploration and journey, and I need to take 6 months to figure this out.
I want it now.
Pull it up. Yeah.
I asked this kid the other day, he was like 15. I was like, yeah, what's the best rap albums of all time?
Oh, God.
And I was so curious. And he said the albums that I would say. And I was like, how the fuck do you know that? And he's like, the internet. Yeah. I'm like, no. What's your favorite?
Right.
And he said a completely different list. You know why? Because he knew the answers were Illmatic, Reasonable Doubt.
Right.
You know, maybe the infamous Mobb Deep.
Yeah.
He's going to say that.
Yeah.
But the answer really is Drake.
Yeah.
And Kendrick and Cole. So say that. Why you just say that? Yeah. Oh, because I knew that that's the answer that you wanted. Right. Because I'm fucking 30 plus years old.
Yeah.
You're so fucking smart, you little bastard. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how they think.
What am I supposed to say? And then what do I actually mean?
What do I feel?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have that process. Kind of, we talked about mental health and all that stuff earlier. I didn't have that process. I'm trying to talk to a shorty. I didn't have ample time to answer a text based on what I want to say. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You can take 50 minutes.
Let's go. Yeah.
I had the perfect answer.
Yeah.
Do you like me? Circle yes or no on this piece of paper in school. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Let me circle yes. I like her. This shit is like, yo, I got your number. Let me curate my perfect persona. Let me
ask a couple homies.
Yo, she hit me up. What should I say? You have a full day almost to respond.
Yeah.
Imagine how that changes everything, how we interact, you know?
Dude, it's crazy. What was your sort of vision or idea for this new record?
Man. I don't want to disclose the title of it, but I will say that originally I had done Future Proof EP, you know, during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And I had created this whole thing about, like, you know, I was buying so much shit online. I feel like the world was so much pollution, so much cardboard boxes, so much shit. And I was starting to feel really guilty about just the consumption. I bought a new computer, and I remember, like, when you buy a new computer, they say, well, future proof yourself by putting more RAM or more space in it. You'll get a better processor because it'll last longer. And I was always like, damn, that shit costs like extra $200.
Yeah.
Fuck. Did I future proof myself?
Yeah.
Did I put $200 into something that's like emotionally good for me? Yeah. What if I got $200 worth of massages this month?
Yeah.
Would I feel guilt about that? But I don't feel guilt spending $200 at a record store or something that was very obvious that it was for me, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? But mm-hmm, not inside.
Yeah.
And I had this whole like fleet of music that was kind of like expressing those inner thoughts. I think slowly coming out of the lockdown, I started to feel a lot different about what I was saying, mainly because I feel like I was in a transitional point of myself as well. I feel like the world was transitioning into a different person because we were all coming out of something that we feared so much.
Totally.
And even though there's like this dancing around it, I didn't want my whole project to be based on some of the tropes and stuff that I was feeling at that time because it was quite insular.
Yeah.
Coming out of it now, I'm like, that's not how I feel. This music, I feel, is, wow. I feel like part of it is really to show well-roundedness, and the other part is just straight raps. Like, I'm...
Yeah. Like, all the shit that you felt like you still had to prove.
Still had to prove. I'm here making music based on how I feel, but I'm also one of the illest, and I'm gonna prove that. That's what I've been in here, you know, doing music with my group by myself for more than 10 years. It's time to really make a project that encompasses all the things I'm capable of, really.
yeah. What sort of like a community were you surrounding yourself with for the record? Were you like in like new studios with new collaborators and whatnot, or did you tap back into like the people you had been with?
That's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
I think,
like, were you like consciously seeking something new, or was it like, let me work with the people that I know can like make me my best?
I think I was looking for something new.
Yeah.
I think I was looking for something new. I was,
that's exciting though.
I was mostly used to producing for myself. So once that I kind of met a whole new fleet of producers, they allowed me to be a better writer. And then I'm co-producing and I'm kind of letting them take the reins of what it sounds like. And I'm actually like trimming it and arranging it. I feel like that's probably where I'm at my best. A mixed bag of me actually on the piano or starting an idea,
mm-hmm,
and giving it to a producer to help me finish it.
Yeah.
Or a producer creates an idea and I'm writing and
just
then I help them
finish it. Passing the ball back
and
forth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you announced a date for the record yet or no?
Nah.
Nice.
Yeah, not yet. But nice. I don't want to spoil too much.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I will say this is like, we're going to be hearing this interview later and you'll be like, damn, yo, you was right, bro.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I was saying.
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Mm-hmm. My last question for you is just sort of your mental health now. Like, what are the sorts of things that you do to keep you in a good headspace? Maybe if you're feeling a little bit down one day, what are the sorts of things that you can go to that you know will lift you up? Or like, what does your mental health care look like nowadays?
I got a whole list for you. Ready?
Let's go.
Candles.
Boom.
go crazy. I love a candle. If the candle has black soot, throw that candle out.
Mm-hmm.
People could judge me and say, you bougie, you buying $90 candles. That candle that you bought from blank store with that black soot, you should not burn that in your crib.
No.
That shit is going into your lungs.
You don't want to be breathing that.
It's toxic.
Yeah.
That's why it's so cheap. That's one. Incense is another one.
Yeah, it's huge.
I like for my house to smell good. I like a clean house. I like good people. I don't bring people into my house that have bad energy at all. I don't give a fuck who they are.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck what session it is. If I open that door and I see you on demon time, you can't come in my house. Like, I don't play with that. Reading is important to me. I think that because most of the stuff, and I don't mean reading on your phone, I mean actual books.
Yeah, a page.
Something you could actually fold and have tangible texture. I'm such a fucking nerd, bro. I love the smell of the book when you first crack it open. I'll go to bookstores and buy tons of books to the point where, like, man, like, I don't even know if I read any of these today, but they're my possession. And the moment that I feel, like you said, there was a void or like, yo, I need a little extra inspiration.
Yeah, there'll be a calling. Yeah.
There, I'm going to read this book today.
Yeah.
That really helps me. I think that cleaning for me is a form of meditation, especially because I normally clean with headphones on. And by the time I run through, like, Miles Davis, Blue and Green, or Bitches Brew twice, I'm like, yo, I clean my whole crib.
It's done. Yeah.
And it's just like the music is, it's a sus therapy in itself. It's,
yeah.
You know, I'm not listening to trap shit when I'm cleaning my crib. You know, not that I don't love that.
Yeah.
But probably something like Maxwell or like, you know, Lucy Pearl, Raphael Sadiq, some shit like that. Something that'll get me like dancing, but also like conscious.
Yeah.
And what, and through like, you know, I recently went through a breakup. So for me, being available and accessible to my closest friends and family, it seems like it's so obvious, but I think considering, like I said, I'm a musician, I toured a lot, I spent a lot of time alone, there was like a lack of communication for me to reach out to people. I know I could have been a better friend, a better partner to anyone, but I think that when you realize how much important that is, I think to reach out before there is an issue is more important than anything else. It's not that, yo, I thought something was wrong, that's why I reached out. It's like, yo, I knew something was wrong because of how much we talk.
Yeah.
I learned that. I hope anybody hearing that really resonates with them. It's like, don't wait for someone to show signs. You should already speak to them so much that you know something you can help.
Yeah, and I know you say it seems obvious, but we talk about all the time of just like checking in on people or just like making those calls. It doesn't have to be something to talk about. If it's just like saying what's up, we all live super busy lives.
Check
like,
in.
It's
like if you think of anyone, hit them up at that very moment.
Yeah. Like, why not?
Why not? Even if they ignore you, bro. Oh, they're going to say, yo, what's up? Oh, I'm just checking on you, bro. Cool. Yo, that person that might say.
Later. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
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 And that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It was great to meet. Super excited for the record. And thanks for getting vulnerable and sharing a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man. We can shed some tears anytime, man. Yeah, whatever you want.
All right, dope. You got to come back when the album drops.
For sure. I'll be back.
Let's get it. Thank you, brother.
You got it, man.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode with Eric. Be sure to check out his solo music on the way, as well as all the amazing stuff that he's done with the Flatbush Zombies and other artists that he's produced for and featured on their tracks. Really love this one. So appreciate you guys listening, as always, and have a great weekend. Peace. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.